Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the 10 Laws Podcast with East Forest. I'm Mr. Forest. Been a little break since we last gathered here in this digital cybersphere. It's been a busy summer. We're going to talk about that a lot in this episode with my partner, Marissa Rada-Wepner. And a lot going on and some announcements about the podcast and other things, just trying to sort out what's what. But I don't need to tell you much about it now because that's mostly what we talk about in this. She was incredibly gracious. We don't really make a plan usually with these podcasts, but she allowed me to do a bit of an inner dive myself and make sense of things as she does, as she's so talented at. And I'm so blessed to be able to have her to like kind of do that work as a partner, but it's also like kind of what she's gifted at anyway. Hint, hint, people hire her to do this kind of thing, but we'll put her stuff in the show notes. But we're going to be in Poland soon at the Dreamers Land Festival, August 3rd through 6th. In Dublin, Ireland with Peter Broderick, August 12th. August 13th in London, also with Peter Broderick. Those are both collaborative ceremony shows. They're going to be amazing, totally edgy for me. Seated shows. And then the Ram Dass Retreat in Boone, North Carolina, August 24th through 28th. Tickets are at eastforest.org/tour. And what else? We just got back from Esalen. It was amazing. Thank you to everyone who came out there. We will be returning, God willing, in mid-December. And we'll let you know via the email newsletter when the signups are coming for that. It tends to fill, so the best way is to get on the newsletter or follow us on social media. Or the best way is on Patreon. I'll let those folks, our community on the council, on patreon.com/eastforest. Know first, so you can grab your spot. And it's just a very, I mean, if you've been there, you know it's a magical place. Magical things happen there. It's a powerful place, too. But it's we really love the weekends that we get to do there. We're working on a few other retreats for next year. And at some other places too, we're doing our best. But it's an active process, so we'll let you know again through the newsletter. And aside from that, releasing the record, music for the deck of the Titanic. And of course, I say this in this episode, but just to say that that's a record that I've been working on for a long time, years, and that title has been in process with us also for years. Is in no relation, of course, to the tragedy that happened recently. And I was, it's just interesting how these things come about. But we're on sort of different trajectories, but also in some ways picking up on something in the ether that happens through art sometimes. But we released the song Patience, and we're about to release our next single soon called So What, featuring Duncan Trussell, the comedian. But I'll play some of Patience at the end of this episode if you want to hear it. You can listen to it wherever you listen to music. It's a song I'm very, very proud of. And perhaps I'll do a little episode where I can tell you a little bit more about some of these songs and the process of making them, because it was such a wonderful process. But thank you to everyone on our council on Patreon. That is patreon.com/eastforest for supporting this podcast and supporting the project in general. It really makes a big difference, and I really enjoy having a venue online there, our little spot, our little neighborhood online where I can share unreleased demos, share music in advance. I get to share all sorts of things there that I can't share anywhere else, like whole hour-long recordings of performances, improvisations that happen at festivals, or the Stanford D School, the whole talk we did there, that's on there now. In addition to the song I just mentioned with Duncan, that's already been given privately in advance to our friends over there. So lots of stuff like that. And of course, monthly, we're doing our council with the members there, where we get on Zoom and do a live meditation musically together that's based on what's going on for us. We kind of get to share and connect. It's really beautiful to witness one another that way. But I'm not going to get into things too much longer because we talk so much about what's going on and really try to be as honest as we can in this process with you, because that's what it's all about. So we're going to dive into this conversation with the wonderful Marissa Rada-Wepner. So we're back with a summer edition of Arata Krishna Roundtable. Here we are, just getting things rolling. Good to have you here again.
Yeah.
Radha.
It's great to be here. I'm looking at your new headphones. You have them on backwards.
It doesn't matter. This is all mono. These aren't, I mean, they are, I guess, new, but they're not fancy.
Okay.
Because you made me feel self-conscious about my other headphones, saying I look like Princess Leia and I can't wear them in podcasts. And so I stopped doing it.
Where did those go? Where are they?
They're in a case over here. They travel with me. I wear them in private.
This new set. It's more moderate for sure.
These are just the classic Sony, like, they're like classic. They've been around for decades. Yeah. So,
we can start again too.
No, this is it. If I had to title this podcast, we talked about doing this a week ago or so, and I was going to just have it titled like "I'm Burned Out," and it was going to feel like I was. Well, at that time, I was just thinking like, okay, how do I communicate to my friends out there what that means? The problem was, I don't really know what that means.
For you to be burnt out?
Well, I guess I don't know what the result is. I don't know.
Well, maybe start with...
There's a lot to talk about.
Start with
here.
How you feel. Not like the future, but right now.
I feel a little more at peace today, because last night we did some good work. I did an academy journey, and that brought me... made some really strong reminders, but I guess I really don't know how to put it. It's just, there's been a lot going on, and a lot going on since that last tour in November, and a lot of changes and turnover behind the scenes in East Forest Land, like staff change turnovers for all different reasons, but a lot of different people. And that, as always, causes turmoil and change. And then on top of that, there's been some things I've been trying to overcome and trying to work through professionally and personally. And then we've been moving around a lot and doing a lot of projects and things and touring and doing some international touring. And so it's just, you put it all together and there have been times where I've kind of been losing my mind, feeling maxed out and trying to really listen to the universe and what is, and really trying and really noticing my struggle to, like, on one hand, feel it and notice it, and on the other hand, struggle to know what to do with it. And amidst this all, you know, full of gratitude, and it's like many things that I've want to do and have wanted to do, able to start to move in that direction. And that's why I think it's so confusing, because it's like, on one hand, some things that I've been working towards for 20 years. And the other hand, I suddenly feel like beat up, like, I don't know if I can do it, kind of, or in this moment, I'm just feeling like it's a lot of, like, I'm pushing.
I think if somebody's been a listener to your podcast, they've heard you in different conversations kind of touch on what you just kind of did an overlay with, of like hearing you talk about how hard touring is, or how hard the merch is, or how hard this thing is, or how hard that thing is. And while you do have a lot of gratitude, I think the type of person that you are, you get really affected by what's not working.
And what is the definition, right, of like not working, right?
Well, like you said, you feel like you're pushing, and that's not good. That doesn't feel good.
And that's my tendency in life. You know,
that's your
tendency.
We'll
get into this, and I don't want this to just be about me, but
it can be about whatever comes up. I don't care.
Whatever.
I have no agenda. But
my whole life, if I had to sum it up as like a soul attitude, it's basically impatience, which then causes me to push harder to move forward. And sometimes that can work in a 3D world, but at what cost? And
the impatience, I want to unpack that a little bit. Like, with other people, or with yourself, or with the world's, Like you see something and you want it, you want to be somewhere else already.
Yeah, it's like everything, you know. It's just like I feel impatient about just about everything.
As your partner, your beloved, I can say that that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's that's a challenge. So I'm just adjusting like audio settings. I was like doing you instead of me. I got to turn me up.
So you have a soul or just like an inherent quality in you that is impatient.
Yeah, typically. And it's something that I'm conscious of and I work with it. But
when you work with others, what I see happen often for you is you get disappointed with others not meeting your standards, what you think you want or the level of something you want.
Is this something you're noticing because you're now working?
No, God, no. No. I've seen you do this for years.
Yeah.
It's another just, I think, inherent tendency of yours.
Yeah.
And then when you're not feeling centered, it gets inflamed.
Yeah.
And that becomes a major perspective versus something that can kind of pop up every now and then. It's how you're mostly seeing everything. So I suppose what I've witnessed in you is increased frustration, increased negativity.
Well, I mean, you were kind of laying out what's gone down since last November, and it's been a tough run, in a sense.
Well,
I mean,
even before that, sweetheart.
I know, and for some reason, like, my mind is blocking out a lot before that, but absolutely.
He's talking about, we had a conversation the other day where I was, it was a, with somebody else was in the conversation, and was giving an overview of my experience in the East Forest world. And it's, while it's so interesting, there's so many beautiful, wonderful things to be grateful for. And I think on the outside, somebody would look to you, especially if they're an aspiring musician such as yourself, and they see you, and what the perception might be is like, wow, this guy's, things are really working for him. Like, things are really coming together. He's got a lot of great good breaks. He's got a lot of great good connections. He's doing lots of interesting, cool, wonderful things. There's always more. You're always growing. But the way that you feel is quite different than that.
Well, it's not that I'm like, oh, no, that's true. I feel successful. I just never thought success would feel so, would be so difficult.
I never thought success would be so difficult.
Yeah. Like, look, when you're by yourself hustling and doing your thing, but I was in the Lower East Side, and it was hard, no doubt. But like this project started in 2008 by myself, really in the spirit of the gift of having a powerful experience myself with my first record and just wanting to share that with people. There was no money involved. I didn't want there to be. And the thing that we were servicing in like psychedelic therapy of doing it underground was just that. It was just like super underground with our community. It was small. And I didn't even have a plan, or I wasn't saying like, oh, this is how I'm going to manipulate it to grow it.
All right. Well, I want to just interject. In this process, I hear you say often one of your main hangups to maybe like taking a break is I have to let all my dreams go. So if you're saying like you started, if you're saying you started East Forest with like no plan, when did all these dreams come in that you're highly attached to
now? Good point. So they kind of preceded it, I guess.
Oh.
Part of it is just getting older and having a reckoning with what those younger dreams really, where they were coming from, you know?
So younger dreams, meaning like you were a teenager and you thought to yourself,
I think I always was fighting against the world when I was a kid to feel accepted. A lot of this came out of the darkness retreat. We talked about this, where I realized, oh, it all stems down to wanting to feel accepted. And that's why I enjoyed music, but that's why I first was like an actor.
So does accepted to you equal like I have to shine brighter than everybody else?
I think I saw the world as so broken and depressing, like even at a very young age, that I thought like, I can't just be normal in that. I have to be extraordinary or weird or different because I had to be the class clown.
Mm-hmm.
Because that way I'm not succumbing to the Marat.
You know, the class clown, but then like the star of the play.
Well, it's more like by being a class clown, you get attention. I got accepted through that because I didn't feel I could be accepted for just being normal.
All right. Okay.
Anyway.
You've grown out of class clown, though.
Somewhat.
Where is the, like, I'm trying to understand this hope dream manifesto. Yeah,
I'm trying to get there. I just remember when I was young and singing, like, or acting, and I'd be, like, fifth grade or something, and being told, like, oh, you have a good voice, or you have talent at this. And you'd be like, I do? Okay. And you're told, like, you have a thing here. And you go down that route, and you might continue to be told that. And you keep reinforcing, like, oh, this is my thing. Like, I wasn't the athlete. I wasn't, right? Maybe those guys or gals are told, you can throw a ball well or whatever it is. I was told, you can sing or whatever it was. And so it was just a way, it's sort of natural in a sense. Like, you just fall into the things that you're kind of told you have natural gifts at. Mm-hmm. And I think I was really scared of, I don't want to say this. It was just more like living a life like what was around me. I'll just put it that way. In suburban Oregon. Like, that seemed like the worst thing. So I went to school all the way in New York. You know, I was like, I really was like, there are two ways. My first attempt to break through was like in the system. I was like, I'll be a doctor. Or that was my plan. I thought that was like the top of the pile of the normies.
Well,
like,
that's kind of what we're conditioned to believe.
Right. And then I realized that wasn't going to be enough. And I was like,
enough for you?
Yeah. When I got to college, I made the switch where I was like, I think I'm going to pursue like the arts more first.
Because that'll be, I'll have more power.
Well, no, but frankly speaking, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I felt really alive being creative and I just liked doing it so much. But I was afraid. I was like, I can't do this as a career. But then I was told by a career officer at school, yeah, you should just do the arty thing. You can always come back and do the pre-med later. I was like, really? And I just like full force into it.
Okay.
It was an amazing meeting with this career advisor. They said, don't do pre-med, just do the arts. Great advice.
So then I did pre-med for 1 year. It sounds like you finally got permission.
Yeah, yeah, I did.
To be successful in the arts. And so then was it like,
But it was educational, right? So when you're in school, it's just freedom. You're just having fun. It wasn't a job. It wasn't pursuing a career. So it was a blast.
You weren't thinking about a career at that point.
I think at the time I was really into like musical theater. I thought I'd be like a Broadway guy.
Okay.
I thought that would be like the coolest thing.
Top.
Believe
Broadway.
It or not. Yeah.
I believe you.
And so I went to graduate school for acting because I thought that's what you had to do, which you don't. And I did that whole thing. And then I was 23 when I got out, and that's when I was in New York City. And I was, long story short, making music right away and the whole time getting into bands. But music took over, as some listeners know, in 2008 when I had my big mushroom experience. And I was like, this is the thing for me. And acting, all that stuff went to the wayside.
Well, you also kind of were struggling with acting because you were realizing you weren't going to get the roles that you had hoped you might.
I was bald. Yeah, that was the problem. And even when you did get great roles, they would end either in a couple days or a couple weeks, a couple months at best. And that was heartbreaking. And it was just a hard life and extremely collaborative to the point where it's just like striking gold was just rare, let alone making enough money to live.
So you really gave it your all.
Oh, fully. Like had the agents, managers, like auditions, plays, TV, film,
and you
soap
were doing
operas.
It to some degree.
Oh yeah, I was. I mean, it's similar like success, I guess. I never got like the big TV show, but I, you know, and if I did, I probably wouldn't be here doing the music things. I would have just been like, oh, I got the show and it lasted 5 years, and I made some money, and now I'll just keep trying to do that. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, it's over.
So you switched. Gradually, in a way, to music. And
music took me over. It was always a huge love and passion of mine.
Yeah.
But eventually, it was so obvious through psychedelics. I was like, this is a very clear expression of like direct. And I didn't have to be hired. I didn't have to work with anybody. It would never end. It just became very clear to me. And that experience I had with mushrooms at once, I mean, so loud.
Certainly, there was a before and after moment.
Absolutely. September 17th, 2008. Yeah.
And then you started East Forest. So you're saying you were going back, you were like, well, I think my hopes and dreams predated East Forest. Because then you started East Forest, and like you said, it's music for mushrooms,
yeah,
essentially.
I realized
doing ceremony, and you were in the spirit of the gift and pretty open and free with it. And I think maybe this will tie in too. Perhaps like at the time you had a partner who was more like, let's say, the breadwinner.
I made a fair amount of good money doing photography in New York. That was my day job.
Yeah.
And I used that to buy her house, or at least the down payment and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And she went out and had a job.
Yeah.
And so for at least a year or two, I had this huge blessing of like, there wasn't a big stress. Like I had to go make another income.
Okay.
And to be fair, I was building furniture.
Yeah.
And I was working construction. So I wasn't bringing in a lot of money, but I was working.
Yeah. I just say that like, you were in a mindset where you weren't putting money pressure on being in a band and making music.
Right. And
you
in
weren't
New York,
doing that.
The photography gave me that freedom to basically, you know, I'd have a day where I could do music or,
yeah,
you know.
So the money and music weren't really tied together at that point, and you were happy just doing it.
It was actually like, I had been doing bands and music before this moment in 2008. So when I had that revelation, it was like a big relief to be like, I'm not trying anymore. It's just like, it just felt pure.
Right. Because when you were in the other like pop
very
piano
trying
band, you were
all
wanting
trying
to be like a Matchbox 20 or something.
No, not bad. No. More like Ben Folds 5.
Okay. Or, you're wanting to be a Ben Folds 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who are some of the other ones? I love this.
Gavin
so
DeGraw.
Cute.
Who else was back then? I'm forgetting some of the names, but there weren't a lot of piano. Keen was around.
Okay.
And then there was like non-piano bands, like Not a Surf. And like,
uh-huh.
And then there were a couple, I can't remember.
But maybe you thought like, I'm going to be Billy Joel one day.
I wasn't that good, but I did study his songs and I sang them in college and yeah, playing music for dinners.
And you're trying to break through with the piano pop.
Yeah, I was really trying. And look, it served a purpose. It got me... I practiced songwriting for many, many years and wrote many, many, many not so great songs, and it got me recorded mm-hmm. many albums. I was learning
mm-hmm.
and running a band, which was hard.
But then when you started East Forest, you're like, I'm moving away from that, trying
no band,
to break into the industry
no
thing.
No band, yeah. No singing really, because I was really burnt out on singing and not trying to succeed.
Not trying to succeed.
But wanting to make something great, but it was only for me. It literally was, I thought I was making something anti-commercial.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, like, that was the freedom. I was like, this can't be on the
radio.
And
so you put out Education of the Individual Soul, and you put out, like, Love Bomb.
That was, in 2012. It was 4 years later.
When did you have your first yoga assignment with Elena Brower?
So I can we can speed this up, but
no,
I mean,
no, I
know
I think it's interesting.
In 2015 is when things changed, and I know why.
And that was with Elena? No, she was before then.
It might have been 2014, but things changed in 2015 because I got a message, like intuitively, I feel like from the mushrooms.
Were you on a journey? What's the setup for this message?
It was
to
more
come?
Like over time.
So like an intuition.
For 6 years, we were doing underground ceremonies. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I released Crystal Starship and Portlanders. And those were ceremony albums from those. And I actually, at the time, was like, I don't know if I should release these. Because they were so different than the education thing. And I was like, really different.
Yeah, so you were holding these underground ceremonies, recording while you're playing.
Not all of them, but recorded
and
some.
And then you would take those and make the albums.
It's like 45-minute albums. Yeah. I just edit a few of the songs down to
Crystal
CD
Starship, length. I love so much. Remembrance is one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, and that was at the farm with probably 9 people. We were in the living room. Like, there was no temples or anything. It was just, like, in the winter.
And Spotify was kind of just starting then.
Not then. Yeah, it was later.
No.
Or maybe it's just then.
Yeah, it was right then, 14, 15.
I mean, at the very beginning, I was on MySpace. Like, 10 Law. I put up, 10 Laws was the first song. It was 10 Laws, Simple Things, and Pacific Coast Highway I put up on MySpace.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, I felt like I got a message that from wherever, the universe, of like, this has been in the private shadows, let's take it into the public light. And I remember thinking, I don't know how to do that. I mean, I'm playing these long form ceremonies, that's it. Where would I play? And then wouldn't you know it, Wanderlust calls and they're like, we'd like you to do 5 or 6 festivals this summer, which was a big...
How did Wanderlust find you?
I don't remember.
And wasn't your class with Elena before then?
Probably. Yeah, maybe that's connected. And I also got a showcase at South by Southwest, which was the... I started like applying for festivals.
Okay.
And that one gave me an official showcase.
Did you think you'd made it?
I didn't... I wasn't delusional in that way, but I did think it was a big deal. It was a big deal for me. Yeah. Wanderlust was a big deal for me.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be horrible.
Wanderlust.
Oh my God, it was really difficult. Yeah, they just felt like abusive. I mean, but I...
So you signed up 2015.
I packed up my Prius and I just drove.
To do like 5 or 6 Wanderlust festivals. And that was when Wanderlust
was
hot.
Before I'd done one.
Wanderlust started, I started going, I think in 2011 down to Tahoe, and I went every year. And in 2014, I played and I taught there. I DJed.
Yeah.
And they worked my ass off. I think I did like...
They work everybody.
7 to 8 sets in like 2 days.
There were people there that I played with, like Jeff Liffman, mm-hmm. and there's other people. And I remember...
What was Jeff
Hanna,
doing?
Same as me, like keyboards and...
Oh, just by himself?
Yeah, we were all by ourselves, Hanna uh-huh. too. And and I remember like, it was his thing. He's like, this is it. It's my job. And it was like a thing back then. It was a new thing.
Oh,
like
yeah.
you could go
DJ
around.
DJ High Five. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all became friends and we'd see mm-hmm. each other. And you could get gigs then at other yoga studios. And this was like a new thing.
Oh,
I
remember.
It was like a cool, you're playing music for yoga.
And they'd be on tour. And then
So
studios would host.
Book by myself a couple dates on the way in between these things and drive around.
It's worth noting you didn't practice yoga.
I didn't know anything about yoga.
You didn't know anything about yoga.
They assumed I did, and I was afraid because I remember being in Montreal and they were teaching the class in French, which I don't speak, and I'm like, I really didn't know what was going on. Yeah.
And you would just East Forest behind it.
Did my best, but I mean, look, I was also trying to find my place. And
well, there was the calling to bring it out.
Yeah, we don't have to go down the Wanderlust rabbit hole. There's so many stories about people.
Well, I'm just
and telling me to play Jay-Z. I love that one. They came over while I was playing. Can you just play a little Jay-Z? I was like, I'm actually playing music. I'm not DJing. And they're like, yeah, well, Jay-Z be awesome. You know? I mean, that so many things like that happened.
But it was a big opening for you. And your music and ceremony overlays with the meditative space, which a yoga space is, when it's taught well, it just equals
Shavasanas
that.
Was when things started to click. So I still was trying to, be like, maybe I'm a DJ, maybe I'm the beats guy, maybe I'm the this or that. I was still like, what's going on? But then the Shavasanas would come.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd just drop into ceremony zone.
Yeah.
And everything was like, oh my God. And I would then, it'd be like, I did this for years. And then I started meeting teachers and I would tell them before we start, like, do you have anything you want to connect about? And I'd say, yeah, talk as little as possible and let's make the Shavasana at least 20 minutes. They'd just be like, what are you talking about, man?
Well, it's an art form, and I can speak from this side as a yoga teacher, to weave in with your live music. You don't want to just talk over them. You want to incorporate them. And Tony G, he's a master
at that. Well, that was the first time, I think.
You felt like somebody got you.
Yeah, and listen to that whole podcast if you want to hear the Tony G story.
We love you, Tony G.
And it's funny. And
when Tony's teaching in East, he calls him East, and East is playing, Tony's walking around the room and he'll just say things like, oh, yeah.
He tells the whole room, he's like, if you can't hear the music right now, you're doing something wrong.
Listen,
you need to stop what you're doing.
Take it East. Just do it.
Yeah, he'll come over and lean in, like whisper in my ear, and I think it's a problem. He's like, all right, man, just launch him. Launch him right now. All right, just do your thing. This is great. Just go deep. Yeah. I'm like, okay, man, I'm going to hit the deeper button. I forgot about it. Are you ready for it? Nitro.
And then, you know, fast forward a bit, You're still putting out the ceremony albums, masks, as albums, like Music to Die To, Music to Be Born To.
Well, that came out of, because when I was in Portland, I was volunteering for hospice because I had that beautiful time. And I was really feeling, we left New York. I was like, I'm not acting. I was like, I felt like I'm doing carpentry and building people's homes with someone and learning. And I said, I want to work with the dying. I think because I was afraid of dying. I was like, I want to. And so when I was in there, I was just thinking about that a lot. And that's where that record came from. But it was just music from ceremonies. It wasn't like
Was Helms. That was kind of your 2016 grieving album.
Yeah. And so
a big process for you.
I didn't anticipate this being a retrospective.
We're just talking, man. Go with the flow, babe. All right. Jeez. I'm not planning anything either.
I'm self-conscious. 2016 was when I think musically there was a shift. Like for me, when I bought my piano and recorded that record, it's the first time I'd recorded a piano. Yeah. It was a change. It was and I also did, or worked with MC Yogi and we did Ritual Mystical.
Oh yeah,
that
album's
same
so
year.
Good.
And it was the first year where I finally felt like something started to click musically.
Okay.
And ever since there, you know, 2 years later was Ram Dass.
Yeah.
And that was the next like milestone.
Well, you did.
And then Music for Mushrooms.
Well, you skipped over Cairn.
Yes.
But Helms was your, like you said, something switched for you. And working with MC Yogi and Ritual Mystical, something
same,
switched for you.
Literally at the same time. I was recording at the same time.
And then
time.
You got the Trevor Hall tour. And then you were working on Cairn at the same time. And Cairn, you were trying to do something different. And when you were with Trevor Hall, you were also still, let's say, finding yourself. Because you had this thought like, oh, now I'm going to be like a performer on stage.
No, I was
totally out of ceremony space.
I was asked, I had heard, we had the same manager at the time. And
you and Trevor Hall.
Yeah. And my manager said, Trevor really likes like Bonobo and that kind of stuff. And like, as if like, that's what he's kind of looking for. So I was just more like, I'll do my best to do that sort of.
When you were opening for him?
Yeah. I had a 45-minute slot and I had recorded this record that I wanted it to be like Chiasmos, but with vocals.
Cairn.
Cairn with Key Sweaty. And the process, as you know, as creative processes do, it turned into something a little different. It's a little more indie pop, electro. More like Postal Service-ish versus techno-y. And in my mind, I was actually told, you need to promote this record. So if you saw that tour, anyone out there, I sang and played probably 4 songs or so from that record.
Yeah.
And then I threw in like 10 Laws, Grandmother's Fear, Chopping the Woods. And that might have been the set. But I was like singing on stage, like, you know, the song. And that song, Fresh Start, I really like that song.
Yeah. And Tiny Choices. There's so many good ones.
I'd like
on
get
there.
Down on my knees and I was like singing line. Because you told me to get down on
my
knees.
Yeah, I was like, make it like, get soulful. Get sexy and soulful up there.
But it is true as a performer, I was very much still trying to find my place. I think I was starting to feel more confident as like a producer, as an engineer, as a writer. And then with Ram Dass, I put my all into that. Like, I remember really thinking, I'm going to just write everything I can think of and just try everything. And I really worked on that one. I was proud of it. And then Music for Mushrooms was back at the farm that same year in July. It was recorded in 2018. So the same time, we just been at Ram Dass.
Yeah, we were, the month later.
So it was just weeks later that
doing a farm
I'd had in my mind, you know, I want to come out of the psychedelic closet.
Yes. I remember that conversation, just feeling like, absolutely, do it.
It was also, I don't know how to say this. I mean, I guess it's still illegal, but my point is like, it was not as accepted in 2018. Mm-mm. Really. It was still like, oh, you could get like, you're not getting hired anymore for Wanderlust or whatever.
Think of it too, at least my perception at the time was you were really wanting to do it as an act of service.
It was needed.
I have this music. People are doing psychedelics more. I've been releasing them as these shorter forms, like Prana. It's like a 45
or a
60 minute
album. People were picking up on it, you know?
But you were like, I'm going to claim it. I'm going to make it 5 hours. Somebody could put this on and go into the journey the whole way through.
Well, the same thing that's in the journeys we're doing. I kind of felt like we have this tool. We've been developing as a community this protocol and this music now. At that point, it had been 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
in the privates. That, so when you get the message, bring into the light. It's like, this is how. I just need to be a little brave and just put it out.
Just say it.
Just say it and own it. And I didn't even know if you could put out a five-hour album. Literally. I did not know if you could upload it and it would work. But we did that. And I think it was around there that I had this idea of the concerts.
Yeah, it was the same time.
Bringing those elements from the original, the roots.
It was early 2018.
Yeah, brought the ceremony to the concert, so to speak. And that was the ceremony concert.
Yep.
So anyway, I felt like the more I've leaned into essentially the beginnings, the more quote-unquote successful it became. But to be honest, a lot of it's just good timing with the world. And, you know, I didn't plan. People would say, oh, Music for Mushrooms came out, right, you know, 2 weeks before Denver was the first, and Oakland, and decriminalization. Mm-hmm. Great planning. I was like, that's the mushrooms right there. That's the universe. Like,
right.
It's like I recorded that a year ago.
Yeah.
And now it's coming out in 2019.
Yeah. And I think you learned with your tour with Trevor Hall, kind of like, oh, I don't want to do that. Just be on the stage. I want to find the hybrid, which is where you created the ceremony concert.
Well, don't get me wrong. I wanted to do it. I just wasn't as good at it as like a Trevor Hall. He's amazing. You know, it's like, I was just trying to find who am I?
Okay.
Like, I also wanted to be an awesome DJ, but I just wasn't. Other people were much, much better. Or add anything to the list. You try everything.
Okay. So you came back to like the soul searching. Who am I really?
And what's my voice? It's finding your voice. Yeah. And we're always finding our voice. And I think that's, if you want to bring it to present day, that's where I'm struggling. I'm kind of like, what's my voice now? And I'm feeling these same similarities now in the way I'm feeling the collapse in a similar way I felt it in 2008 when the other things I was doing, the bands and the acting, weren't happening. The world was collapsing them too, at the financial collapse, Occupy Wall Street. And I'm just like, what? Things have gotten much more complicated now. And I'm just trying to find my own center.
Well, I think too, what's hard in a way is you're still slightly ahead of the curve.
In what regard? I mean,
I'm thinking of the ceremony concert. Where,
well, that's a great example, though, of an idea that's very difficult to pull off.
It's difficult to pull off. The intention's beautiful. People want it. Like, people
want to do it.
People want to come to you live and be able to drop into a journey space or a medicine space. And we are kind of essentially doing that, but we, because of, when I say ahead of the curve, we're doing that, but it's not legal to say like, hey, everybody, come and this is a mushroom experience publicly. That's what I mean by ahead of the curve. So we're kind of still, we've got one foot here and one foot there where we're doing it, but doing it in a light and also in
it's a bridge liminal time.
So I think just that might be why there's some of the headache, perhaps.
Well, that goes back to the pushing.
Yeah, right? Like, that's what I'm going.
So sometimes pushing is not negative. It's like, oh, it's bravery. I don't want to just make it pejorative. Like, I think I've always wanted to take risks because I grew up in a world that felt like super low risk. And so I had to really fight to tell myself, you're going to have to work harder to take risks, but risks are where it's at. And sometimes that gets me in trouble, but sometimes it helps me do things like, all right, I'm going to do that thing, or I have an intuition, I'm going to try and make it happen. And right now I'm having a little more trouble listening to what wants to happen, because I feel like a lot of the things I'm trying are stumbling or falling apart or taking three steps back to go one step forward. And it's a little confusing where I'm like, okay, what wants to happen then? I'm not totally sure. And what's odd is because I feel the most, I don't know, prepared on certain levels, or like I have the, like, I don't know, let's say you've been building some tool, like the tool's ready, or like I've been.
And you feel classic signs of burnout. And I've felt burnout before in my own work and life, and I know how hard that is when you're in it. It's a sense of like overwhelm, fatigue, frustration.
But it's bad timing.
Well, you said like, I want to listen to what wants to happen and what's the intuition. Like, you have to pay attention to how you're really feeling. Like, yes, part of you feels like the timing is here, but the truth is you feel really burnt out. And so what wants to happen is you have to take a little bit of a break and recalibrate. The energy will come back for you. Because again, I've been through burnout phases before. When I give myself a pause and I come back to my work, I feel refreshed and renewed. Things are in alignment. Things flow again.
Well, I've never taken a break, even in COVID, because I'm a solo artist. I just like doubled down and started recording Possible. And
I know.
I just went boom. I never stopped.
And we're talking simply about music, but you have this podcast, you're working on a documentary, we lead retreats together, you do speaking engagements, you have a book that you've been working on. There's
yeah, that came in my, well,
so and if it, many honestly, arms.
To be honest, the documentary is something that I'm, the Music for Mushrooms documentary, we're in post-production, and it's something I'm really excited about. It's been really difficult because it's just, I didn't anticipate how large these projects are.
On top of everything else you're doing, yes.
Yes, well, that's what I was trying to say. It's like, if that wasn't happening, I think this would be a little more manageable. And then plus we had some things in life where, you know, the land I was living on for the last 6 years in Southern Utah, I had to move. And that was incredibly destabilizing. Besides the time, I'm still dealing with that. Like, I'm in this transition
yeah,
down
that's
there. And
just
it's
the past
9 hours
months.
From here. So every time mm-hmm. we're off tour, I zip down there. I just spent a week there, like, busting my ass, like, heavy manual labor, and then zoom back here, rehearse, finish things, and then we bounce out on the road again. And just, I've been doing that.
It's too much, sweetheart. It's too hard on you. Like you said last night, it's all about even just taking care of your body. Part of it is your body is really tired.
I'm a little worried.
What do you mean when you say you're worried?
Well, about my body. You know, you can't get a free lunch like that. You got to, like, rest.
Yeah.
And
yes.
So part of the... I understand the break part, but I also, to be honest, I'm having trouble figuring out the what that actually looks like. Because we have engagements, right? Through the end of the year. And I have, you know, I'm in the middle of a release cycle for music for the Deck of the Titanic. And let me state the obvious, the name of that title I've been thinking out for many years. And of course, I had no idea about this tragedy with the submarine or that this would come back into cultural consciousness. It's yet again, just like interesting alignments there.
Yeah, you have had the title Music for the Deck of the Titanic for a long time.
Yeah, and so it's been coming up in my consciousness.
Somewhat strange now
yeah.
that that's in the news like cycle with a tragedy. That's very yeah. unfortunate.
You know, and then of course with the documentary, and then I can slow down the land stuff down south, but you know, we'd like to have that to feel stabilized again. And it's going to take time. There's no way around it. It's just a lot of labor. And the doc, I enjoy it. You know, it's really important to me right now. And I have, you know, with the Bright Antenna,
your record label.
Yeah, I love them. And I want to be a full partner there, you know?
You have been.
And I'm proud of the record. You know, I worked really hard on the record.
It's really good.
Mary M and Duncan and Anna and then Jens and Owen who played. I mean, I also want to just do my part and help usher that into the world so that it gets the support. It's the best thing I've ever recorded. And I say that because there's so much expansion on there for me. I recorded right here in this room, Jens' drum kit and
Miriam.
Owen. And, yeah, and it's real expansion in sound. I don't want to call it like a change. It's just like I got to experiment in ways I've never been able to do in the past. And I'm proud of that. And so I want to give it its little push out into the sea of the world,
all
as
right.
it were.
So you say, I don't know how to take a break, because it's true. We have obligations and engagements into the future, and this album isn't released, and there's a desire to perhaps do a band's tour with it.
Which I want to do. It's like, that's been a, you know, nobody knows this, but like, I had a band, which we're not going to name.
We talked about it.
But my point is, it was so difficult. It's taken me 15 years to finally be like, maybe I'll do that again.
Mm.
But there's a part of me that's very excited because I did it. I know what it's like and what you can do. And now I'm like, oh, but I know so much more. What we could do with the band now.
So you're excited.
Yes. Yes. But I'm also like, how the hell do I fit all this together?
I feel like personally, when I think about you on stage with the band, I get excited too. I would love to see you playing with other players.
I'm scared a bit, to be honest, because, you know, but I was so young when we did it before too. And it can be different this time. I really believe that. When I was playing before, we basically played as loud as we could, like all of us. It was so loud. It was insanely loud. And like,
give us a vocal line.
No, I don't even remember it. But like, it was more like the drums were so loud. I was pounding my keyboard as loud as I could, and the bass player was like drunk and playing as hard as he can. And like, it was kind of just a mess. We didn't even understand that there was another way to play, like subtlety. And you're in a loud clubs that you're trying to compete to, mm-hmm. you know, get out there. And so I do feel that there's some element of letting something go to allow something new to emerge. And there's a fear in me that means like all of it. Because yeah. I don't want to do that. But I also know like things are what they are. But I can tell that like what's not working is plan A. And plan B, B-E, seems to be something about allowing for something I don't know. And I don't know.
You really don't like that. You don't like the I don't know. You don't, that whole sentence,
well,
allowing.
Again, it's very inconvenient.
For something I don't know. You want to control and plan and initiate something you know and have decided.
Yeah, and I just, if I go back to the roots, like, I'm trying to think like what I decided originally. On one level, it happened to me. I felt tricked, but I absolutely made decisions there to like make that record because I was following because it was enjoyable. It was soothing to me. And so it's like, I want to do this. And I gave myself the freedom to do that. So maybe the litmus test now should be what feels soothing.
I like that.
What is enjoyable. And that's just like, a bit of a head scratcher.
Well, you said the doc.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the touring has been hard. We've had some amazing moments out there. Like, I can actually think of moments. I'm going to name a few just for gratitude. Like, I remember being on stage in San Diego playing our harmonium and crying because it was so beautiful. Like, it felt so just like all of us just like in this moment of just like it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember even recently in Pasadena, just feeling like people were sitting in the church and this beautiful sound and Floating did a great job and her reflections, I mean, and just feeling like, oh, I couldn't play like this several years back. Like just some nuance and detail. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. That's so cool. That's so cool. You know, like, and just kind of feeling that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like Iceland, I remember recently when we were in Iceland, and I could go on and on, but Iceland, there was a ceremony we played, sort of a ceremony concert, and they were passing out these chocolates with mushrooms and things on their own. And I just remember moments in there where it felt really, I was just struck by like, I'm in Iceland with this Icelandic community. And you might think like, we're so different, right? But it was like, here we are having this very real, beautiful moment energetically.
And it was deep.
It felt far realer than things I might feel if, like, you know, your typical concert. That can happen, right? No doubt. But I've had many, many of those all the time. And so there is a lot of beauty in touring, but it feels like 22 hours of toughness and maybe 2 hours of, like, ecstatic heights. But then you go to other events, you know, like Denver was hard.
Yeah.
I was trying so hard. And, you know, we were working with the room and the speakers were broken and the hail and the...
We just got filleted in Denver.
But sometimes there's not much, you know, it's out of your control.
It was out of our control.
Or we just got back from Esalen.
Yeah.
And I felt like teaching with you and being there and the group was so great. Just, there are moments where you're sitting in the room and people are talking about stuff and you're just listening and you can hear the ocean. I mean, what a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think like, well, it's beautiful, right? But I was tired too. So I don't want to like just like say, well, I don't want to do any of that stuff. But I also, and performing live is kind of like stand-up comedy in that like once you stop being on stage, it's like a muscle. You got to come back. And there's a part of me that's afraid of just putting that down. But there's also a part of me that really wants to reinvent things. And maybe the band tour is the way to do that, to do it completely differently. I mean, it is a way.
It feels good to me when you say that. Like I said, I'd love to see you in that iteration. I don't feel like ceremony space is ever going to go away. I hear you that you feel like it'll diminish for you if you're not doing it, but I don't fully buy
it. Well, and we've struggled to, just so y'all know, like we have really tried to put on more of those dates in other places, and we continually are struck with logistical and financial issues that make it impossible.
Yes.
Truly, without charging ridiculous sums of money just to pay for the cost. And it's a bummer. Like, we go far down the road of planning with new organizations or new production partners. And then, like, I mean, recently we were told they're like, we went way down the road. And they're like, yeah. So, anyway, the layout is half the room is in with you, and the other half is on this roof deck with a TV screen. And I was like,
no.
Excuse me?
No, we're not going to do
it work.
Like that.
It just won't work.
Can I say what I see for you?
Yeah.
An idea? Like you say.
So gracious of you. So gracious.
What do you mean?
You are just so gracious.
This is, and you've heard this, but it's like, do the things we've committed to.
Yeah.
Don't commit to any more except.
Except the things that excite me?
Except if we can pull the band's album tour together for music for the deck of the Titanic. That's like the only thing that could be a yes.
That would be a limited run, like a week or two.
Sure.
By the way.
It would be a limited run.
It's not like
run.
We're saying, oh, it's going to be a half a year tour.
No, it'd be very
small
short
thing.
Like a week, 2 weeks max. But I think just doing that would be invigorating for you in a new way. And if you got that formula together, it would give you confidence like, oh, I could do this again in 2024. And now I have more options to pull from. Because what I hear from you a lot, one of the things that stresses you out the most, a common phrase is like, I'm up there by myself. It's all on me. It's so stressful because it's all on me. And so to know for yourself, like, no, I could do the shows where they're all on me, but also ones where I have my team, there's other musicians, and I can go between those two.
I miss the camaraderie.
Yeah.
I miss having a drummer to blame. No. You're only as good as your drummer, and that is true.
But so, like, we do the... If the band tour can come together for the late fall or early winter, and then you take the rest of the year off besides our trip to Esalen in December, and then we'll just
exactly
see.
And I also, and then, the documentary, which I love, like I've worked all weekend on that.
Yeah, and then the documentary is going to come out. But that's going to come out. You're not.
We hope in Q2, maybe like, well, who knows? We hope next year, mid next year.
Yeah, and 24. then that'll give you time to like, then get on tour for that, or then start to play
in
shows
theory
for that.
But you know, you go back to like our staff change. Like, I don't have an agent right now in the US, and you know, people are like boohoo. But it's just like the point is like, well,
they're the ones that plan all the shows.
It's just hard to book those venues without that. And
well, that's
or ceremony tours, and that's been part of the thing we've gone back and forth with. And
well, that's where it's like you don't have it right now, that person. So take a break from trying to do that right now.
Yeah, I'm not like actively out there taking meetings or trying to chase that down. Like, well, to some degree. The realization we had last night is like, look, if I'm trying to go back to the North Star of 2008, it's all about the music. not just my music, but music. And this music that I've been able to work on and been blessed and to develop, I can be proud of the effort put into it, but whatever it is something that is all of us, that is larger than me, as is all creativity. And we're just trying to get it to people who need to hear it. And I don't even really control that as much, because you hear all these stories of synchronicities or whatever happened. I'm just wanting to be in service to that and the best ability so that it can be out there for people. And then I'm not hurting that process. I'm helping that process. But there's a limit where it's like, I'm a human being. There's only so much I can do. And I'm starting to hit a wall where I'm like, oh, I'm pushing way beyond what I can do at this point in my life. And that's what I think I'm trying to reckon with, because I have to trust that, okay, then clearly the way to be of service is not the way you thought it would be. It's not like, now I'm going to turn on all these different levers because they're right in front of me. It's like, what if it's too hard or it's killing you? You know, maybe that is the feedback. I just don't want, I guess I have this fear that I'm being lazy or something. It's like that I'm not being in service because I'm saying like, oh, well,
you're a workaholic.
We're not going to tour then.
You're a workaholic. You work all of the time.
Well, I enjoy making things.
You do. But so the idea that you're lazy, I hear that you fear that that's true for you. And that might be what's driving you so hard. But you are certainly not lazy ever.
Well, maybe I need some time just to have a reorientation of the why, you know? And it's something I have to do every day, but maybe I need to step back a little bigger. And I feel it. I know it. But I also know, like, I don't know what I'm... Maybe I just want to let go of what I'm working towards. Like, I want to make great things, but beyond that, maybe that's enough. And I think the last few years, a lot of plans have been made. Like, because, you know, you'll be asked questions like, well, where do you want it to go? I'm like, well, maybe like this, or like, this is the things, or, you know, what are your values? I'm like, well, okay, it's this. And you kind of do these exercises, and in some ways, it's almost like a trap, because it's like, then you're making plans.
I think it is a trap.
As opposed to, I don't know, some celebrities, there's some headline where they said, like, I have no goals and no plans. And I was like, I vibe that. You know, I was like,
it keeps it real and organic and alive. If you've made a plan in the past that you're currently trying to work towards, it's
inevitably disappointed.
It's dead. Energetically, it's dead.
Yeah. So going back to, for all of us, it's like, if the North Star is what is exciting you, but also what is bringing, what did I say, soothing? What brings that, and it could be exciting is soothing. It was for me in that case. That little creative private thing was so soothing. I need to allow that back in my life. There's many things, like I said, they're soothing, but I have to weigh that on a scale against like a human being.
And playing with Peter.
That was awesome. Yeah. And so... Well, that's confusing, right? Because so we have these dates planned in Ireland coming up in London. And the London show...
To play with Peter.
Yeah, and the London show, the promoter has been going back and forth about canceling it.
The whole time.
And we've been fighting
to keep it
to happen. So all you should know, we are fighting. And as of today, it is happening. My point is that it's confusing. It's just like, what's going on? I want to do it. It's definitely exciting to me. I think it'd be amazing. I think it's edgy for me, for him. And then it's like the world, even though it's one person, kind of saying, maybe. And that's where I get, that's where the confusion is. Cause I'm like, okay, not do that kind of stuff. I don't know. Or not now. Maybe it's a later.
It is confusing.
Many of those sorts of things.
Well, it's the question is like, do I keep pushing or do I fold into the no? Why is there a no?
I wouldn't call it soothing. I just think that one's more like exciting and edgy. Is it soothing to go transatlantic and figure out a whole new show in like a day or two together and improvise in front of an audience?
No, but you love playing with Peter.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's the dream come true.
He actually has been lighting that fire of like, oh, what it would be like to play with a band. Like basically great other musicians.
Because he's that way for you.
Yeah, we're playing together. And I had never played a improvisatory ceremony style thing with someone else that we did the live stream here.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was a blast. It was just a blast to hear music coming in that is just not what I make in a different way. And he's bringing all his gifts and history. It's just been a while, you know, since I've done that kind of stuff.
Well, where does this leave you with your podcast?
The podcast is something I started, gosh, do the math. It's been 250 plus episodes and it's been weekly, except for the past couple weeks. The past couple weeks, I apologize that I have not released an episode. And it's because I finally just kind of took a pause and was like, I need to, what's going on? And why am I doing this? I do it. And this is the truth. For two reasons. One, I really do enjoy the conversations. When I actually am doing them, I really enjoy it. I really love listening. I've learned a lot about people. It's actually opened a lot of doors of just like getting to know people, even with you, even though I've talked this whole time. And I enjoy it. But I also thought I've always tried to have a diversity of offerings. And some people it's music, some people it's retreats, some people might be a film, and some people might be a podcast. And I thought, hey, it's just another way, another medium to reach people. But I don't have an answer about the podcast. I'm not going to stop the podcast.
Here, let me ask you this. When you think about taking a break from the podcast, it's not going away and you're not stopping it, but maybe you don't have to be responsible for it every week. How does that feel? I don't have to be.
So what, is it like every other week or?
Just start with this. I feel guilty. Guilty.
Yeah.
So
I feel like I made a commitment to myself, and even though I didn't.
So the guilty is like, it sounds like, oh no, you can't do that.
I feel like, I also feel like I've put in so much work. I mean, 260 episodes. That's a significant amount of effort. And I'm proud of the catalog of evergreen stuff. I don't want to just like kind of unconsciously like kind of walk away. It's kind of like,
I'm not saying walk away. I didn't say that. I didn't say walk away from your podcast.
You didn't. Yeah.
But it brings up to you in you like finality. It brings up that idea.
I guess I just sense change coming overall and I'm afraid of it because I don't know what it is. And I don't want things to just fizzle like overall where it's like, I just burn out and it's like, I guess that was that.
Okay. So how about this? I hear you're worried about it becoming a larger end than you anticipated. So what if it was framed more like, I'm going to take a break from the podcast until October 1st or November 1st?
Maybe.
And
what do y'all think? I don't know. I'll tell you this. Like, I have another episode with Sochil I'm going to release, or maybe it comes up before this. And there might be. There might, probably will be times where organically a conversation happens or I want to talk to people and I'll just, or you and I want to talk.
Sure.
You know,
so no, I'm not doing it.
The schedule is more like.
Well, that's what I was trying to say.
Usually it's
every
Sunday
week.
And I'm like, I got to get it done. And
yeah. So if it's not like every week I have to do this, but I can do it when it feels soothing.
Perhaps
I can
for do a period of time.
When it feels right. I don't have to stick to the rigid every week.
I've been thinking of doing that perhaps until a certain date, you know, and I've also been thinking about reorganizing the format of the podcast, and I'm not sure what that would look like, including the name of the podcast. I originally wanted to call it Walk the Walk or Walking the Walk because it's a song, but to me, it's accurate. It's like we're all just figuring out how to walk our walk, and it's these conversations about sort of subtly exploring how we do that and other people do that.
Cool. I like Walking the Walk.
But my old manager's like, it's got to be 10 laws. It's your people know the song. And I was like, it sounds kind of religious. But
so then maybe.
But the title doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
end,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But no. But tying into like things dying, new things emerging. If you did take a step away from the rigidity of the format of the podcast, even just the schedule of it, it give you time to come back and be like, got new theme music. I've got a new title.
A new structure, perhaps.
I've got a new structure. Yeah, like,
so I was just on Corey Allen's podcast. Love Corey Allen. I really enjoyed my conversation with him. I think it was last week. And his show's Astro Hustle, but he just told me. He's like, this is going to, now I'm changing the whole show. And now it's called And Then It Hit Me. I was the first episode. But he has like a structure. Like, it's sort of like, this is what it's framed around.
All right. Okay.
And it just got me thinking, you know what? Maybe that's what I need. It's just some new energy like that. It's like,
I love it. I love it. So the podcast isn't going away. You're giving it some time to breathe so the new structure can emerge. You're giving yourself some time to breathe.
Yeah. I think so. I'm scared to even say that, but I already sort of, you know, just had 2 weeks. And
how did you feel besides guilty?
I felt guilty. Oh, I
gosh.
Felt pretty guilty.
Jeez,
I mean,
Louise.
We're also traveling. We're on tour almost all of August. You know, we're going to be in Europe, as I just mentioned, as well as Dreamers Land in Poland, as well as the Ram Dass Retreat in North Carolina.
When we're on the road, it's hard to keep up with these things.
Yeah, I have to do them in advance, typically. Yeah. And then I have to keep popping down to Utah. And when I was down there, I was camping out of my truck. You know, I did solar power, the whole bit. So
you're just taking the pressure off yourself. When it works out, you're going to do it. In the meantime, when you're not doing it, it's dreaming into being, which can only happen when you let go of it.
Yeah, I want to allow whatever is trying to grow into existence to grow. I really do. I really want to be in service to it. And it's clear to me that something about that is letting go of the grippiness of how I thought things would be. Beyond that, I don't know a lot else. But I think if I picked up anything from this conversation, it's follow what feels soothing overall as a mechanism of guidance. And the documentary, it feels like I like working on it, and I like who I'm working with. You can go to musicformushrooms.com, by the way, and our landing page is up.
Check it out.
Been talked about. It's just a landing page.
Sneak peek.
Mm-hmm. And I think touring is the thing that's just been a little hard, but maybe this band thing, if we can figure out how to book dates, which is still a maybe.
Yep.
And then if I can find a band and find the time to rehearse with them, then we'll try it. And perhaps that's the magic, like, juju. It's originally what I wanted to do. I just thought it would be different.
Well, and also you thought, like, I'm too busy. How will I do it?
Well, I was kind of waiting for the agent. And then I was like, that was, and then they were going to book the thing. And then I was like, okay, now we get it together. But
I love the idea of you following what's soothing. I think you should do that in everything you do. What's soothing? How can I be of service? What can I give versus thinking about what I can get? How does it feel?
Yeah.
And for yourself, recognizing maybe more quickly than you have in the past when you're not feeling good.
Yeah. I mean, practice really, I know it's obvious, but it really helps you to stay on top of that stuff. There's a reason why you have to do that. And
you mean your music?
I mean, you know, practice in the greater sense, whatever that is for you, exercise to sitting, to yoga, to the things that keep you centered.
Have some of your practices fallen away recently?
Not completely, but yeah, there's been less time to really carve out that practice time. And we did your yoga class today, and even just thinking for myself, like, I mean, just, and the experience last night, just putting it together, it's like experiences last night is the kind of practice. Even that goes on the wayside for me. I'm like, well, I don't know, I'm busy, you know. It's like, you gotta do that stuff.
Yeah, we take them for granted. We get in, like, kind of grooving, and the practices fall away.
Wait till you really bottom out.
And the wheels fall off, and we wonder why. It's because you stopped doing your practices.
It's obvious, you know.
Yeah, but I do it too. I let my practices fall away at times. I think we all do.
Yeah. I prioritize certain other things.
We just feel like fires we're putting out, the alertness of like it has to be this and that.
And we've been saying that's kind of what it's been feeling like the last while. It's just like we're constantly putting out some fires and we're tired.
Yeah.
We're tired. How are you feeling before we end?
Right now?
Well, sure. Or in general? Or
I feel good with where my life's at and the balance that I have. It's been intense because your life has been intense and your life greatly affects my life. And so the fact that we can have this conversation about you slowing down and not pushing makes me feel like I can take a breath, a deeper breath. Mm-hmm. This is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I want this for you. I want this for us.
Because
when you get edgy, life gets edgy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel really excited by the idea of pulling back from pushing.
You know, plan A for us, or at least with the work, and you're working now more intimately with the team, was like, get all these things in order for next year for the doc. And I still think that's happening.
Yeah.
I just didn't think it would happen by plan A, B, and C all not working. And going back to the drawing board and being like, okay, what will it be now? And we'll see. We'll see. But
I love the mystery space. I love the unknown.
Yeah, I know you do. Crazy.
So maybe even something about that is soothing to me. Like, I feel better hearing you say, I'm going to allow what I don't know.
And I love a good plan. Like, on paper, really nice ink. It's just legible.
Some grid paper.
Nice Sharpie to cross things off as you go. Oof, that is something else.
Some metrics.
Oh, let me tell you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is what it is. Well, thank you for joining us this week, bringing the podcast out of the ashes so we can get an episode out.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
We will be releasing, the timeline is a little unknown as we record this, but there is a track coming out, may have come out already, hard to say, called So What, with the wonderful Duncan Trussell. And it's another piece that I haven't done anything quite like this before. So it's either coming out soon or I already shared it with my Patreon audience. So we've been talking about it over there.
Hey, Patreoners.
The council on Patreon. And then the album's coming out later on. So some really amazing videos for that too, which we're excited about.
Lots of good work.
All right. Thank you, Radha. What are you up to? How can people find you? You've been so busy with life coaching and ketamine therapy
and you
yogiing
and mommy.
Do you want more summer work?
I love to hear from people. You can just reach out and say hi. Follow me on Instagram. Whenever my numbers go up, I feel a sense of increased value.
Oh, boy. Well, your website is Marissa Radha Wepner, RADHA. It'll be in the shownotes.com. And she is hireable if she's available.
Thanks,
You're
man.
Lucky if you can get her. All right. Keep walking. Exercise it from our bones. Thank you, Radha, as always. So gracious. Isn't she so gracious? It's embarrassing in some ways to talk that much about my process, but she makes me feel comfortable and she sets such a beautiful invitation. So thank you for letting me indulge in these. I mean, in one way, it's the private public kind of thing is always blurred with performers such as myself, but it's also like I've been wanting to find a way to talk about some of these things with you. And that's a better way than me trying to just talk into this microphone and talk to you. I mean, that feels even harder. So it's an exploration. And honestly, we are in conversation through art and through music and events and community. And there's a relationship there. And I want to be forthright and honest and clear about where I'm at, as opposed to lying to you, or more importantly, sort of coming and going. I don't know. Part of that's the world we're in. I think we all have these weird expectations about knowing more about each other in our our internal processes, but I've never been one that is shies away from that too much. Anyway, just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being a supporter of this podcast. We're going to keep going, just kind of sorting out what it's going to be. Maybe a little bit of a summer slowdown, and nothing wrong with that. Always gives me a chance to highlight, too, some episodes from our beautiful catalog, in case you've missed them from years and years ago, because they're evergreen. You should go back and listen to any of them. Well, this song is called Patience. You can listen to it where you listen to music. It's from the new record that's coming out slowly, piece by piece. Music for the deck of the Titanic. And hope to see you out there at some of these events coming up. Eastforest.org. Keep walking your walk. Keep walking your walk. Don't take any shit. But if you do, just do it with grace. All our lives to disguise, working counterclockwise. Catch it all before it drops.
Seeds are sown. It's a sign.